This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. What a gorgeous day. I was watching the news last night, and I saw them talking about this the heat wave that we're in the middle of right now. It's going to be, I just heard Aaron say, it's going to be 85 today and 70s tomorrow. That's not a heat wave. Down in Palm Desert, where one of my best friends just moved, it's 115 degrees down there in Vegas. I would like to be in Vegas right now. And I know that's unusual coming from me. But I heard it's 110 degrees with thunderstorms. And I can't even imagine watching. I kind of can. When I was back in North Dakota, we'd go back to the farm where my mom grew up. And there were some 85-degree nights, humid as can be. And, oh, man, the summer of 77. She was my third cousin. So third cousin's okay, right, Nicole? That's not very creepy if you have a crush on a third cousin, right?
Oh, yeah, it is.
No, it's not. And nothing happened between us.
If you can be linked in, ancestry.com, yes. Creepy.
No. But here's the thing. I had a girlfriend when I was 13. That the summer of 77, I was 15. I hadn't had a girlfriend since then. And I met my third cousin on the farm. Nothing happened.
Okay,
Nothing happened.
Then. Yes, but you can think she's attractive.
We had huge crushes on each other, and we wrote letters to each other for about 6 months after I came back to Seattle, and she went back to Bismarck. But I just remember this one night we were on a hayloft with some of the other kids, and all of a sudden it had been a beautiful sunny day, and all of a sudden these black clouds just came rolling over the prairie like you never see out here. And it was a tremendous thunderstorm that lit up the night. And, oh, my gosh, it was romantic.
Oh,
but nothing happened.
You're really gross.
So there's ancestry.com. I guess there should be ancestry.com then.
Let's all stop. Just stop. Hey, Sean, welcome back. You've been gone for a couple of weeks.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Good to hear you again.
Yeah, I've been gone trying to just work on that perfect joke, so I finally got it.
That was a good one.
I should come back well-crafted. And show it off on the air, yeah.
Okay, third cousin is okay, and nothing happened. So, I mean, I think both of us knew that there was some invisible boundary.
Her name was Lori. It was wrong and creepy.
I remember her name was Lori. Oh, she had great handwriting, too. When we would send letters to each other.
Did you lose touch?
Yeah, we swore that we would write to each other every week, and we did for about a month, and then it became like once a month, and then it was like once every 6 months, and then it just stopped, just petered out. I don't know what happened.
But have you lost touch with that family?
Yeah, I don't. You know me. I don't know anything about my family.
Yeah.
I don't care about ancestry.
Yeah, we got to get you on that ancestry.com or the 23andMe or something.
No, I have no interest. So anyway.
Want to know if you're related to your wife?
Well, I know I'm not. She's Finnish and German. I'm Icelandic and about to be finished. Okay. Everything's good. I've done everything the right way. I don't want anybody to assign anything creepy to to me or into anything.
Texters agree with me, by the way. It's creepy.
Well, we stop going to the text. No, they don't.
So you knew that she was your cousin, right?
They might be buried by Sean, the people glad that Sean's back and telling him great jokes.
Sean, you knew she was your cousin. She was my third cousin.
Right.
And I knew she was my third cousin.
Sure.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
And especially if you don't act on it.
What? That is like, what is that? Your parents' cousin's kid. That is wrong.
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a third cousin. I have lots of those, and I would never date any of them.
Like, we didn't date! We didn't even kiss! I think we wanted to, but we knew there was this taboo.
Yeah, you
the
knew.
The sweetest taboo.
Okay, Sharday. Oh, man. Okay, let's move on. Wait, from the 360, Dory has officially crossed into creepy old man territory. Man, oh man.
Gotta be careful.
That's the only one. What do you mean the texters agree with you? That's the only one.
No, you gotta dig deeper. Like I said, they're covered by Sean's.
Yeah, everybody liked Sean's joke. Yeah, 206, super creepy. Okay. Well, look, when I was 15, any port in a storm. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means. I'm getting out of this. Okay, let's get into the fast 15 minutes, world of news in a tidy little 15-minute patch. I've got a bunch of emails that I want to share, and thankfully none of them have anything to do with me at age 15. From somebody who works for the King County Sheriff's Office. Because as I've told you, there have only been two public officials in my radio career who I have labeled as absolutely incompetent. And one was Scott Kubley when he ran SDOT, and the other is Mitzi Johanknik as she runs the King County Sheriff's Office. And somebody who works for the King County Sheriff's Office has contacted us. King County Sheriff's Office is so ridiculous at this time that the sheriff would rather come down on people like the guild president for a goatee rather than give us guidance on the new laws coming into effect in 2 weeks. And we have confirmed this. Apparently, Mitz Johanknik is all bent out of shape. But she doesn't like the guild president because he came on my show a few weeks ago. And he talked about how incompetent she was. And then, most hilariously, he confirmed what I had heard from other sources, that nobody is allowed to say the name Dory Monson in Mitzi Johanknik's presence, or she will go ballistic. It has been officially banned at the King County Sheriff's Office command from saying my name in her presence. And the same goes for her little lackey. What's her lackey's name? Liz Rocha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Liz, her $180,000 a year. Yeah, we've been longtime friends, so I'll pay her $40,000 more than what her predecessor got, Liz Rocha. If you say my name in their presence, that is officially prohibited. But which is still maybe the crowning achievement of my radio career, because it is one of the funniest things I've ever heard, that a public official who swore when she was running for election, I'll come on your show anytime, I'll talk about any subject. One time she comes on, I ask her one tough question, and Liz Rocha says, you don't have to ask that. And now you can't say my name in her presence, which is very funny. Okay, let me get back to the email. The sheriff would rather come down on the guild president for a goatee rather than give us guidance on the new laws coming into effect in 2 weeks. Morale is in the dumps. We had an agreement in place to give deputies further drive distances to their home of record, allowing us to recruit more deputies. But due to Mitzi being upset, she refused to sign the memo, since the agreement wasn't listing her as the primary reason we won. There are countless policies on her desk, countless other things getting stonewalled and backlogged on Mitzi's desk because she either doesn't care, is inept, or doesn't show up to work. She may be in the office, but nothing of meaning gets done. Every complaint, no matter how frivolous, gets investigated, even if they have no merit. There is no policy or law violation. The sheriff's office is a bleep show, for lack of better words. Mitzi is a weak leader and is making the sheriff's office and the citizens pay. Don't get me started on the judges, crime, and prosecutors. So that's an email from somebody who works for the sheriff's office. And I know how bad it is. I've been shining the spotlight on the incompetency at the very top of command. The fact that Liz Rocha, as the lackey to the sheriff, makes $180,000 a year. when her predecessor in that same job made $140,000. But Liz Rocha and Mitzi Johanknik, they're longtime friends. And isn't that wonderful to be in government, to get elected, and be able to give one of your old, longest-time buddies a ridiculous salary? So that's the way things are running at the King County Sheriff's Office right now. And so I appreciate everybody who reaches out to me, and you are the reason why I've been able to break so many stories about what's going on at the King County Sheriff's Office. All right, next up in the Fastest 15, our Nicole Jennings, the other Nicole, she has a story that's up at MyNorthwest.com. So if you go camping in our state right now, and you know, we've talked about this before, Nicole, you love to camp. I hate it. I don't go camping.
That is correct.
Yeah, but the kind of the key when you go camping is to build a little campfire in the evening, right? And you sit around, maybe cook on it, sit around, visit around
in
it.
Early spring or late fall, but right now there's always a burn ban now, so it's difficult in the summer.
Well, when there's not a burn ban, you are being reminded now by the state. There's a limited burn ban right now. But you cannot bring firewood from your home to a campsite if it's in a different county. And that's because the Washington State Invasive Species Council is warning people that carrying wood across the state or country can inadvertently transport invasive insects and plant diseases to areas where they can cause damage. So if you want to get firewood, you have to buy it in the county in which you are camping. To which I say, or what? Remember last summer when Jay Inslee, in all of his benevolence, he claims that he went out on his Vashon Island property and picked a bunch of apples? And I think he took them to the first responders in the wildfires we had a year ago, if I remember correctly.
It was to the city that burnt down.
Yeah. To the city that had, been destroyed. So Jay Inslee brought all these apples from Vashon across the state. And anybody who's lived in the state for any amount of time, Jay Inslee was born and raised here. He's seen the sign as often as I have. That there's an apple maggot quarantine war. You can't bring apples across the state because they might be maggot infested. So what does Jay Inslee do? He brings apples across the state. But now they're telling you and me that if we bring firewood across the state, we could be ticketed for that. Now, I checked it out. Was Jay Inslee ticketed for bringing possibly maggot infested apples across the state? No, are you kidding me? It's fine. You're the governor. You can go ahead. Bring as many. In fact, we don't even care if they're maggot-infested apples. If you want to bring a carton of maggots across the state, go ahead. You're the governor. But you and me, if we bring firewood from King County to a campfire over in Kitsap, then we can be ticketed for that. To which I say, if you won't give the governor an apple maggot ticket, then you better not try to give me one, which, of course, is an impossibility because I don't go camping. But don't give Nicole, next time you go camping, bring some firewood from your home.
Okay.
And take it to your campsite and see if somebody tries to ticket you. And then I'll make a big to-do about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'm sure the Statue of Limitations is up, but I have often taken it from my parents' house to wherever I'm going. Not that it's, I mean, it's definitely a different county, but I don't know. They're making too many rules now. When you go camping, if you stay in state parks, there's all sorts of rules. There's just lists of them. It's getting obnoxious.
But again, if you're going to have rules, enforce them on the governor. If he's going to bring apples that are infested by maggots... And is there anything more disgusting than the word maggot?
But not really.
If you're going to let him go with maggot-infested apples and not punish him, they say that with firewood, it can have pests like insects, or it may have diseases inside of it, according to Justin Bush. What a great name. He's the executive coordinator of the Invasive Species Council in our state, and his name is Justin Bush. But he says there could be larvae inside the firewood, and so you could be ticketed if you import it across the state. But, man, I would love to have them try to ticket somebody I know and love when Jay Inslee doesn't get ticketed for the exact same thing. It's all a big power game at the top there, I think. Okay, next up. I've got time. I've got a little more time here. Next up in the Fast 15, Stephen A. Smith makes $12 million a year from ESPN, and he is in the middle of some controversy. And that's because he was talking about the Angels star player who was the first. I mean, he was the starting pitcher at the All-Star game, and he's also leading the American League, or maybe the entire Major Leagues in home runs. His name is, what's the guy's name? Shohei? I'm not following baseball that closely.
Shohei Ohtani?
Shohei Ohtani!
Shohei.
Very good!
Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani. And Stephen A. Smith said that because Shohei Ohtani has to use an interpreter, he cannot be the marketing superstar that Major League Baseball needs right about now.
Baseball was dying in the 90s. What saved it? It was the home run competition between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. Now, obviously, Sammy Sosa, we learned later during his testimony on Capitol Hill that suddenly he needed an interpreter. You know, baseball being very, very good to him. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't enough. He needed an interpreter to speak for him when he was on Capitol Hill. Surely didn't need that when he was smacking those home runs. But Mark McGwire basically helped save baseball because you had a dude that you could put on Wheaties boxes, all right, that could ingratiate himself with the younger generations out there and had America transfixed on the sport of Major League Baseball. What I'm saying to you is that's not the case. That's all I mean by that. I'm not taking anything away from Ohtani. I know what he's doing on the field. I know it's nothing short of spectacular. And I understand that baseball is an international sport itself in terms of participation. But when you talk about an audience gravitating to the tube or to the ballpark to actually watch you, okay, I don't think it helps that the number one face is a dude that needs an interpreter so you can understand what the hell he's saying in this country.
And because of that, Stephen A. Smith's been called racist. That how does he dare, you know, go after somebody who needs an interpreter? And it's obviously an anti-Asian slur. And he had to apologize for that, even though everything he said there is correct. And all he was talking about was marketing and who's the face of baseball and who do people connect to. And it's a lot easier to connect to somebody who does not have to speak through an interpreter. That's just a fact. But he had to do this long, flowery apology. You know, I didn't mean to be racist, and I should have known as much as anybody, being an African-American myself, not to label somebody. What he said was true. Everybody has to apologize for everything, even if there is truth behind what they're saying. If you want to be the marketing king in America, then you have to be able to communicate with the largest audience. And if the communication goes through the filter of an interpreter, you're not going to be as marketable as, say, his teammate Mike Trout or, you know, some of the other players in baseball. That's not a slur. It's not racist. It's just analysis. But in these days, I mean, and Stephen A. Smith, the reason he makes $12 million a year, he's paid to give his opinion about stuff. But that opinion was deemed over the line because he was talking about a guy who needs an interpreter, even though what he said is, from an economic business standpoint, accurate. And it's just, it's gotten so silly. But Twitter got on Stephen A. Smith. And man, I tell you, when Twitter goes after you, Look out. All right, that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. All right, we're going to check the news for you. And then coming up next, a woman says that she was kicked off an airline for doing what millions of moms have done while flying. We'll tell you her story coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. This is a suggestion from a listener on the text line. Since I talked about when I was 15 having a crush on my third cousin. You know, it's a cruel, cruel thing, though. I had a girlfriend for a few months when I was 13 years old. And then I went into a five-year drought. And those years between 13 and 18, that's a bad time to be in a girlfriend drought. But that's the hand that I was dealt. And by the way, Nicole, do you remember a couple years ago when Kevin Bacon came into the studio?
Oh, yes, I definitely do. That picture's on my wall.
Yeah. So a listener in the text line just told me about this, too. Did you know that he has one of the most successful Hollywood marriages? He's married to, is it Kira? Kira Sedgwick? It's not right. Kyra, right? Kira. Kira Sedgwick. Mm-hmm. Did you know they're cousins?
Well, I can believe it because, you know, the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, everybody's only 6 degrees away. So everybody's
right.
Related
on the
to him.
2011 PBS show Finding Your Roots, it was revealed, they took a test, and it was revealed that Kira Sedgwick and Kevin Bacon are ninth cousins. And they married each other. You okay with that?
I think we're all ninth cousins.
Wait, so...
Third is too close.
Third? Well, nothing happened. Again, nothing happened. I kind of wanted something to happen, but nothing happened.
You're telling me Obama too.
The third is creepy, but ninth is okay.
Yeah, ninth is practically impossible to track.
You really have to go searching for that ninth cousin.
Well, but okay. So what's the cutoff?
No family.
What's the cutoff where you go from creepy to acceptable? Is it fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth?
Well, like I said, if you're having to check ancestry websites, then you're probably okay if you're relatively aware of your family. But I don't know, probably fifth. I would say fifth and beyond.
Oh, that is
unlikely.
The most arbitrary, random answer ever.
Well, if you think
fifth
about it.
Fifth cousin's okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, fifth
fourth is
like
creepy.
Probably your grandma's sister's son's uncle. I don't know. Something like that.
You've
something,
put some thought
you know.
Into this, Nicole. Do you have something you want to talk about?
No, I just have a very large family. So I know my fourth cousins. I can't name a fifth cousin. So that's where I went.
Okay. All right. Now, anyway, Kevin Bacon and Kira Sedgwick, ninth cousins. Just wanted everybody to know. If you want to assign that to being acceptable or creepy, that's up to you. Okay, there's a story that I saw a lot of last night. A local doctor says she has been put on a she was threatened with being put on a no-fly list by a contractor with United Airlines because she was on a flight going from Montana down to Texas, but she's from Seattle. And she, her name is Farah Khan, and she, like so many young parents realize, her baby had a poopy. So she went into the bathroom there on the airplane, and she changed the diaper, and then she says she put the diaper in a scented plastic diaper bag, and then she put the scented bag into the garbage in the bathroom on the airplane. And she said she had no idea. She talked to Channel 4, ComoNews.com, and she said she had no idea. You couldn't put bagged diaper into the garbage there.
He said, "What did you just leave a diaper in the back of the plane? You can't do that. It's a biohazard." It was a diaper. Baby's poop. You know, like.
And then she says that the flight attendant called her out for putting the diaper in. She also talked to Channel 7, and she says the flight attendant started yelling at her.
The flight attendant in the front started yelling and said, "Did you just close a diaper in the back? You can't do that. It's a biohazard."
And so when she landed, she filed a complaint with the airline.
"I filed a customer service incident report the minute we basically left, and I thought that would be it."
And then she says that that was going to be it. She was just going to file a complaint. But she showed both TV stations, Channel 4, Channel 7, her recent call list. And she had three in a row from an 800 number. And she says it was the flight attendant on that plane calling her to threaten her.
"I picked up and he said, because of a biohazard incident on the plane, you've been placed on the no-fly list."
Okay, so she says that the flight attendant was putting her on a no-flight list. She told Channel 7 also what she says the flight attendant told her on the phone.
"When I picked up, it was the same flight attendant telling me I had been placed on the no-fly list due to a biohazard incident. He said, 'You people bring your children everywhere. You people should just drive everywhere. Don't you all know that nobody wants to listen to your effing children verbally harassing me and my family?'"
Okay, and Channel 4 got a statement from United Airlines.
"United Airlines says they are working with Mesa Airlines and directed us to their team, who told us this by statement. The details, as described by our customer, do not meet the high standards that Mesa sets for our flight attendants, and we are reviewing the matter."
And Mesa is the commuter airline that contracts with United for the Montana to Texas flight that she took. Now, if the flight attendant says he put her on a no-fly list, then that was a lie, because she got on a plane after that to go from Montana down to Texas. But she says that the fact that the flight attendant was able to call her makes her nervous.
"I don't know how to protect my family from somebody who seems clearly unhinged. So what do I do?"
She told Channel 7 she doesn't know how the flight attendant got her personal information, including her cell number.
"There was no real confirmation of where these threats were coming from. How did he have my information? What other information does he have access to?"
And what I'd like to know, I mean, I'm taking what she says at face value. Don't know for sure if it went down the way she's describing, because the airline says they're looking into it. They haven't confirmed that it happened. They haven't denied that it happened. They said they're looking into this. But Dr. Khan says she just wants to keep this from happening again.
"I just pray that no other family goes through what we went through."
So she was very emotional. That's when she was talking to Channel 4 there again. So, Would a flight attendant really go that crazy? I mean, flight attendants have to deal with some absolute nonsense on their job. And if somebody put a dirty diaper in a scented bag and then put that in the garbage, I don't know what else you're supposed to do with it. Are you supposed to just put it in a scented bag and then put it in a diaper bag and take it back to your seat and then drop it where? Drop it in the garbage at the airport? I don't know.
So I talked to my flight attendant friend about this, and she said they advise not putting them in there because they get stuck in their removal process or something along those lines, but not biohazard reasons. And yes, I mean, that woman had those bags because a lot of parents will do that, put them in the bags and then take them to the next garbage they find, but they're in the bag.
Yeah. And she claims that the flight attendant made her reach into the garbage and pull out the scented diaper-filled bag, and she says it's the most humiliating thing she ever had to undergo. So we'll continue to follow this. We'll see if the airline gives a statement after they've done their investigation. But
really quick, is where I think the story goes. Like, there's probably a piece missing, because I'm assuming that they had words at that point, that she didn't do it. Just say, "Okay, I'll take the diaper and just go take it back to my seat." I'm assuming that there were words spoken, and this is where it kind of probably breaks down a little bit. But then she gets mad because the flight attendant has access to her information, but that is normal. When you fly, you give all your information, your credit card, your address, your phone number, everything is there, and all of the airline employees can access that.
I just wonder if there's a little more to this story than what we're hearing, the one side that we're hearing.
For sure there is.
We will stay on top of it.
Regardless, right. That employee, as the person working for the airline, you're probably supposed to stay a little more professional.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We'll keep posted on that. And we have lots more to get to as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Coming up in the next hour in the Big Lead at 2, we'll talk about a couple of different ways that homelessness has manifested itself in just such a destructive way around here. If you are just joining us, then we'll talk more next hour about the breaking news we had at the beginning of the show. A new report this afternoon that's incredibly relevant in our area because of all the naval stations that we have, Kitsap and Bangor and Whidbey Island and Everett. With all the naval stations that we have, it says our U.S. Navy is not ready for war. They're too interested in political correctness. So I'll get to all of that. I heard something at the bottom of the hour in the news that said Joe Biden saying that these voting laws are an attack on voting. And, I mean, asking somebody to show ID is an attack on voting. The only people who would not want you to show ID when you're voting are people who want to cheat, people who want to try to steal elections. There's nothing wrong when you have to show ID to rent a car or get a hotel room. There's nothing wrong with saying that you have to show ID if you want to go vote. But I've said this a couple of days ago, and I got some messages from people who said, oh, yeah, tell a 18-year-old homeless kid that they have to have ID to vote. Tell a elderly person who doesn't have a driver's license anymore. Well, the solution is figure out a way to get a legal valid ID for that 18-year-old and for that elderly person. But don't continue to try to push ways to cheat the system. And the president's spokeswoman, Jen Psaki, she is so over the top on this subject this afternoon.
He'll also decry efforts to strip the right to vote as authoritarian and anti-American, and stand up against the notion that politicians should be allowed to choose their voters or to subvert our system by replacing independent election authorities with partisan ones. And he will highlight the work of the administration against this, the necessity of passing the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, and how we need to work together with civil rights organizations to build as broad a turnout and voter education system to overcome the worst challenge to our democracy since the Civil War.
Worst challenge since the Civil War, she says. Yeah, asking people to show ID to vote is the worst thing to happen to America since the Civil War. Hey, we'll get into all this stuff after we check the news for you. The Big Lead at 2 is coming up next.